Let's get to Phil Murphy, host of ESPN Sports Centre. It's a conversation that's going on in the world of US sport at the moment. He's back with us on a Friday morning. G'day, Phil.
Hey, how you boys going?
We're going very well, mate. This concussion thing, the NFL are front and centre with all of this, and we've had our own little issues through the AFL and the NRL, in fairness, of recent times. Is it becoming any clearer, or are there any new legislations in the NFL to try and take away that contact of the head more so than they've done already?
Yeah, the NFL has a competition committee that meets annually in the off season, which is about now, and they talk about different harsher penalties for high tackles and lowering of the head. I mean, very similar to things you'll hear in a couple of footy codes in your way. And the whole, I mean, if we can put aside the platitude that yes, concussions are bad and agree on that, how far can you go to minimize those without completely altering the nature of the game? And, you know, the old school supporters of teams that, you know, every time a flag's thrown for a hard hit on a quarterback that a decade ago was legal, they're complaining that the very fabric of the game has changed. But at the same time, nobody wants to see stars sidelined. What made the Super Bowl so memorable is that Tom Brady was fit. And Tom Brady and other quarterbacks have a higher likelihood of staying fit if they're not taking shots to the head. So I was hearing the debate you boys were saying, you know, having a few moments ago. Very similar conversation here. In our primary footy code, the NFL, and it's that tenuous balance of maintaining the nature of what is unequivocally a very physical game while keeping your stars and you know, forget that the fact that they're stars, they're people, for keep them safe and fit both while they're playing and after they retire.
Yeah, it's a good point. One of the lines that the schools of thought from the people that want to really be harsh on this stuff and be aggressive and change the game is that we need to start to change behaviour of the athletes, and they need to understand it. Are we seeing that in the NFL? Has there been a modification of behaviour from player to player?
Yeah, if anybody's, you know, watched the NFL, you know, set that alarm for, you know, 1 or 3 a.m., you know, in November to get up and watch these games, you'll see that, you know, whereas players used to, when they would tackle a quarterback or a running back, use all of their body weight to fall on the player or, you know, do certain things on certain tackles and take certain angles, some of that behavior is curbed because, again, that's a change that the competition committee made. But the referees are having to adjust on the fly as well. That's something that any of us hate watching any measure of sport is when there's officiating inconsistency. And any time you introduce a new variable or new point of emphasis for the officials, well, then it takes a few weeks and months for that trickle-down to take effect. So what you see in the NFL is usually very harsh legislation on the field in the preseason and the exhibition games leading into the season, and then they kind of try and, you know, still enforce those rules, especially egregious offenses, you know, while, again, not directly impacting something so core to the game as tackling, which is where 90% of these incidents occur.
And Phil, in your game in the NFL, you've seen a class action. The past players of the NFL, there's been a major payout in the past, hasn't there, for this?
Yes, there has. I mean, you know, retired players, you know, filing suit, guys who are having physical ailments after their career and saying they're not being properly taken care of, and that's part of the impetus for the NFL to change. Sadly, is, you know, that it took a bit of a financial hit for them to realize, okay, not only do we want to preserve, you know, these athletes today, but we may be paying the expense tomorrow if these guys are feeling the effects of any kind of maltreatment or, you know, or what these players are claiming. And again, with the settlement, there seems to be some validity to it, is that they were encouraged to cover up the effects of concussive injuries and then, you know, hurry back onto the field. Now there's a concussion protocol where, again, very similar to, you know, something you see at the MCG in a footy match where, okay, someone's taking a blow to a head, they go under the tent, they go into a concussion protocol, they check and see, you know, what the baseline test is and how they perform vis-a-vis that before there's any consideration of that player returning to the field. You know, the competitor in the moment is often frustrated by that, but again, it's for their own protection and saying, you know, hey, we know you want to get back out there and everything's told you to play through pain and play through, you know, little nicks or whatever it might be, but with head injuries and, you know, second impact syndrome, we need to be very aggressive in treating that and err on the side of caution. I mean, there's a big debate right now in European football with the Euro Championships. A French defender took a shot to the head a few days ago, and they squirted water on the back of the neck and put him back on the pitch. Mm. People are saying, what are we doing? You know, that guy showed a lot of symptoms of concussion to the naked eye and was never fully checked. So all footy codes across the world. It's a point of emphasis and a very hot topic right now.
Well, and the other hot topic is Ben Simmons at the moment. So,
oh, boy.
Philadelphia vomited all over themselves in the last quarter yesterday, our time. Ben was 4 of 14 from the line in the game, and I think he's 22 of 67 in the playoffs. Is he still at the arena just shooting free throws? Because it's become a real issue for Philly.
Yeah, I mean, I can't explain that. It's an anomaly with him. I mean, even when he was coming out of college, people were debating, is he shooting with the wrong hand? Because you'd see him when he gets near the basket, he seems to favor one hand, and then when he gets to mid-range, he favors another. You mentioned the statistics, 32.8% from the free throw line for the playoffs. So 4 for 14 isn't really an anomaly. I mean, it should be, but it's kind of par for the course. It's you know, the law of averages at that point. I think it's, you know, you're going from 32.8% to about 28%. And you'd say, okay, he only missed 4 free throws in the second half, right? He was 4 for 14 for the game, 2 makes and 6 and 4 misses after halftime. He was 2 for 6 when Philadelphia collapsed in that 26-point lead. The problem with Philly was they couldn't even trust him to hold the ball. So it fundamentally changed the entirety of their offense. They were having Seth Curry be their point guard and Joel Embiid be forced to play hero ball. And those were the only two players who hit a field goal for the Sixers after halftime. They were up 26 in Game 5 and lost. They were up 18 in Game 4 and lost. They're the first team in NBA playoff history to blow leads of 18 or more points in consecutive games. It is calamitous. And I'm actually assigned to cover Game 7 if it happens in Philadelphia. You know, we have a partnership with 4 and 20, and you know they're selling meat pies actually at the Sixers Arena. And I was set to go, and I was ready to book my hotel. And here we go, the whole thing falls apart. So he better be at the arena still shooting free throws. I mean, this is your livelihood, and shooting the ball is a very fundamental skill. You can't be that kind of liability. That 32.8% is the second worst in NBA playoff history for any player with more than 50 attempts, full stop, the second worst ever. I mean, it is tragically bad, and credit to the Hawks for taking advantage of it, but the headline here in the States is not Hawks comeback, it's Sixers collapse.
Yeah, so is that, I mean, mentally, what does that do to them, do you reckon, Phil?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question, and sadly, their coach, Doc Rivers, has a history of having teams fall apart like this and not recover. I mean, we saw it with the Clippers last year. We've seen it with some of his Celtics teams from yesteryear. Yes, he does have the title, and his CV is very impressive, but the one blemish is that there are these series of collapses, and the Sixers should have been resting right now and hoping that Bucks next Nets go 7 and they get those teams, you know, with a little bit of fatigue. Now here they are themselves needing to win back-to-back games with their season on the line. And I don't know what you can do if they can trust Ben Simmons to bring the ball off the court. If the Hawks are keen to just foul him, send him to the line, and they know that the Philly's lucky if he makes one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is, and honestly, I am not booking my hotel yet for Philadelphia because I am not confident they'll make it out of Atlanta, sincerely.
Yeah, on the other side, in the West, the Phoenix Suns are waiting for either Utah or the Clippers. Now, that's obviously delicately poised, that series as well. But I read yesterday Chris Paul has gone into COVID protocols.
Yes. So he entered into COVID protocol yesterday morning, U.S. time. And there was a flood of news in the early hours in the U.S. I mean, you guys were probably seeing a break over dinner. But we were waking up to Chris Paul, COVID protocol, Kawhi Leonard, probably done for the playoffs, out indefinitely with what they fear is an ACL injury. But to answer your question with Chris Paul, it hasn't yet been released if he's a close contact to somebody who had the coronavirus or if he himself tested positive. And the NBA has varying degrees of responses as to whether or not if he's vaccinated, unvaccinated, if he's a close contact or somebody who tested positive. But there remains a very real possibility that when game one or two or three of that series happens, he will not be available. And he has been such a pillar of veteran presence for the Suns, that young roster. And not just in a leadership standpoint, he's been automatic late in games. He's shooting better than 80% in the fourth quarter, averaging 10 points per game in that fourth quarter alone for what was a sweep for the Suns. The one luxury the Suns have is that they are home, they are resting, they're waiting for this Clippers-Jazz series to play out, which, with Kawhi out, a lot of us think will end up going 7 games. Paul George was tremendous yesterday for the Clippers, but there remains doubt if he can keep up that level for two more games against Utah. So Phoenix is hoping that series goes seven. They get as late of a start as possible, and it minimizes the time that Chris Paul's away. But that's the big unknown piece of the puzzle right now, is the degree of contact and proximity Paul has had to the coronavirus. From that point, they'll be able to set a timetable for his return.
Well, Phil, as always, plenty to talk about in the world of U.S. sports. We appreciate your expertise, as always. Look forward to catching more of it on ESPN SportsCenter. Thanks, pal.
Great, guys. We'll chat to you soon.